Knock, knock, who's there? It has been the podcast back again. We've woken Rotho up. We thought we needed to get in and get this one done after an epic Game 3 of the NBL Championship Series between the Jack Jumpers and United.
We want to sit in courtside.
I remember being here for a long time, thanks to Greg O'Neill for the tickets, but were they? You were really keen to come on and chat about this one. Let's go.
Yeah.
Oh, the buzz of Mark Worthington!
What an amazing game of basketball. Sometimes we look at a game and we go, that was a really shit game with a great ending. I thought it was a great game with even better shot-making ability come for the fourth quarter that just moved that game into another stratosphere. And kudos to Tassie for getting it done in the fourth quarter and going up 2-1 in the series. I can only imagine there, Chris, that the game was just unreal to watch live. With how many big shots were made in that.
You know what? It was. That's the one. It was a big shot, and it seemed like it was going to be a drag it out, grind out kind of game early days. The scout was solid defensively for both teams. You know, Luke Travers did a really good job on Milt Doyle. I want to go back to the start of the game, though, because Matthew Dellavedova picked up a really, really early foul in the first seconds. And he was defending Milt Doyle right in front of me on the second or third possession. I'm thinking, if I'm Milt Doyle, go at him. But I just thought that probably the bit, if you really want to nitpick, and we'll get into all the great in a minute, but when you've got a key player picking up a cheap foul in the early seconds of a massive game, go at him again and go at him again. I thought the same could be said for Milt Doyle later on. He picked up his two and then his third. He ended up sitting with four. When he came back into the game, they didn't go at him. So, look, it was the way the game opened up, though, and the shot-making in the fourth quarter, as you said, it was, you know, me and my wows. Sort of sitting there in courtside and wow. And no, really, really fun game and historic game to be at.
Yeah, I thought for the most part United were in charge of that game, and it only seems to be the 10 minutes in the end. And even still then, I fully expected Melbourne United to win the game. The few points that I want to bring out is kudos, and this is going to be a rarity, but kudos to the umpires, kudos to the referees for not falling for Chris Golding's flop towards the end of the game when Matthew Dellavedova was entering the ball in. Chris had grabbed onto Sean McDonald and basically fallen out of bounds. Now, in years gone by, I would have suggested that they would have made that call, but they let the game just continue to roll on. What we saw transpire from there with Jack McVay's shot, I've seen a lot of people say that this is the biggest shot in NBL Grand Final history. I don't think I know enough about the NBL history to say it's the biggest shot. I sort of have flashes where I can remember Ebi Arar making big shots in a fourth in a game for the Sydney Kings and whatnot. But I'm really happy for Jack McVay that A, he took the shot, B, that he knocked down the shot. That was a lot of confidence to be able to take it, but I didn't expect anyone else to shoot it at the same time. And I think I saw a quote today when he saw Milton Doyle jump and save the ball in his head. He was like, "What are you doing? Like, this is our ball. You don't need to save it." And at the same time, when he got the ball, he said, I'm going to shoot the shot.
And you know, the thing was, I thought the exact same thing at the same time. And when you sit there just as a fan, I was the same. Like, why are you saving it? But then you look up at the scoreboard. They had no timeouts left. So whether he knew that and it was genius or he fluked it and it was lucky, you know, if that was out of bounds and United have a chance to set up their defense, get established, I think it could be an entirely different result, but they got him on the hop. I want to go back a few minutes before that, and Melbourne United, I still think over the course of the season, Melbourne United have been the dominant team. And in that game, they were up double figures. They led most of the game. And Marcus Lee went down with what I hope isn't a serious leg injury, but fear is. And Majuk Deng came into the game. The very first play they ran for Majuk Deng was a turnout three that he knocked down. He then went and knocked down another three, and he had an incredible period of time being in. The scoring punch that he delivered was incredible. Now, just for a minute, he hasn't played many minutes game one and two. There's a whole conversation to be had about Majuk Deng staying ready. And we interviewed Jock Landale last NBA season, and we spoke about the same thing. And I was so impressed not only with the performance and the ability to put points on the board in a hurry by Deng, but again, his ability to be ready to do that and have the confidence to do that. But then something interesting happened. Dean Vickerman has a front line, or his two five men, Joe Luella Chul and Ariel Hakpoti, the two biggest players on the court. And he went small to counter Majuk Deng, and instead of going big and penalising him, because however great Majuk is offensively, the reason he hasn't played much is he's struggled defensively. Now, I was sitting there, Tassie had fouls to give in the last minute. They inbounded the first one, foul, inbounded the second one, foul, and you've just described Chris Golding flopping and falling out of bounds, and we all know what happened. But as I'm looking at the play develop, I'm looking down at United's bench and I'm thinking, you've got the two biggest basketball players on the court and you need to inbound the ball. Surely your safety valve is to be able to lob it up to a seven-foot athlete to go and at least catch it. Instead, you've got Kyle Bowen, Luke Travers, and guards. I don't know. It surprised me that United felt the need to adjust to Tasmania when they were in front and couldn't manage it with the starting lineup that's been as dominant as any lineup this NBL season. How do you see that?
I was going to say, some called it a bit of a coaching masterstroke, but it was luck that the Majuk Deng situation fell into their lap of how that worked for them. And so for me, kudos to Majuk Deng and what he was able to do. What I really liked about what he did was he didn't just settle for his threes. He hit the first two threes and then he got JLA on a shot fake and a dunk, and then he got him on a shot fake and an N1 shortly afterwards. And then once they went into a timeout and they said that we're going to switch everything, they switched Ian Clark onto him, and he allowed, I forget who it was, I think it was Sean McDonald shot the ball, or maybe Milton Doyle, and then crashed the boards and got on the boards. And so there was three different ways that he showed his versatility on the offensive end. I agree with you that I thought that Melbourne could have punished him a lot more, and they had the one horn set where they went off Luke Travers's side or Kyle Bowen's side, flicked it back to him, and then ducked in JLA in front of the rim, and it was an easy 2-point hook at the front of the rim for that. I felt like they could have gone to that time and time again, but chose not to and went with the small ball instead. Yeah. And one thing that stood out is that when something works for you, go back to it until the team figures out how to stop it. And that was something that you always told us when you were coaching, or when we were teammates as well, that continue to run the same player until they figure a way to stop it. And I don't think they went back to that play at all when they should have continued to run that play.
You mentioned Sean McDonald briefly. I was at the game and I was sitting next to Dave Pearson, who we're both good mates with, and he's looking across. And he's like, "I really like this this little guard from Tasmania," and I'm like, "Yeah, me too. I coached him at under 18 state level, under 19 national level, and under 20 state level. I thought that was the best game of basketball I've seen Sean McDonald play as a professional. I just thought his composure, the pace that he played at, the defensive job that he did. I don't know, at the end of the game, he knocked down an important three. I just thought it was a very, very mature game at both ends of the floor. And when the scoreboard wasn't ticking over and United were doing a great job on Milt Doyle, it was Sean that kept that team just within arm's distance. So, again, for me, as good a basketball game I've seen Sean McDonald play as a pro, given the environment, given the importance of the game.
I think his usage out of pick and rolls has been understated all year of how good he's been, but that was another level for him during the game. And my self-plug of I had to choose an X-factor player for both teams, and Sean McDonald was my X-factor guy for Tasmania in this series. And I just think that he's playing at a level well above his years in maturity so far, and he doesn't seem rushed in what he's doing. He's handling the pressure of the Delis, the Shayilis very, very well, and it'll be interesting to see how he closes out the series on this one. I do want to bring up the emotion of the Jack Jumpers. And we messaged after the game about this, and something that is, I think, relevant to what we both experience on both sides of the equation. And my memories go back to that game 4 in Melbourne when you guys were up 20-odd going into the third quarter, and the Sydney Kings team found a way to win off the back of a Dante Draper huge fourth quarter, and we all remember Gorge running around the court, fist pumping, and there was so much emotion attached to that comeback and what that meant, which was met with an ultimate, it was hard to get our energy back for the following game. And I wonder how much emotion plays into this when you see Scott Roth hugging Majuk Deng and crying about and being teary about the emotion attached to him staying ready at the time, Jack McVay, and the emotion of the big shot and the team and how they celebrated. I want you to walk us through your feelings during when we played and going into that game 5, and probably the emotion of where Melbourne United would be after feeling like they let one go in whatever arena it's called this day, Hisense Arena, John Cain Arena, whatever it's called.
To answer your question, we got to the locker room after that game and nobody said a word. Nobody said a word. It was like we're at a funeral. You know, we had the championship there in our minds on our home floor, and yeah, at the time, you always think we let it go. Clearly, that's not giving you guys enough credit. But no one spoke. And the only messaging we got was Al, when he did speak, Al Westover saying, playing tomorrow, 9 o'clock, we'll talk, or whatever time it was, we'll talk about it then. And I hadn't said a word when I used to go to La Paqueta and eat. I was with a few other friends, and clearly a different night than what we thought we were going to have. And I still hadn't said a word. I was trying to figure out what I was thinking. And eventually it became really, really clear. And I got on my phone and I messaged every single one of my teammates and the coaching staff. And as soon as I had this thought and sent it, I felt a lot better. And all I said to them was, if somebody had have given us the opportunity before this season started to be in a game 5 of the championship series, on Sydney's home floor, would we take it? And everybody said yes. I said, well, that's what we've got right now. It doesn't matter how we got here. you know, if we had been down 2-0 and fought back to 2-2, we'd probably have a different sense of emotion. So however, it doesn't matter how we got here, we're here. And so perhaps that's something that Melbourne United are thinking. It doesn't matter how we got here, whether you lose by one on the buzzer to a Jack McVeigh near half-court shot or whether they blow you out by 30, you got to get back to work. And, yeah, you can speak of the coming down from the emotion. You just said how hard it was. It's they've got to do it again. And that's they've got to know that's what it takes to get over United, that level of performance. But just the last thing I want to say about the emotion was it wasn't fake. That they were like that when they were down 10 and hit a three and United called timeout, I think, up 7 or up 5. I was sitting directly opposite Tassie's bench and they believed. And there's a difference between actually believing and, you know, knowing that you still expect to be around. They were good. You know, even when it wasn't celebratory, their emotional state was one where they were just going to keep coming. They believed they could win. So credit to them. It's going to be fascinating to see if they can do it again.
I like the fact that the way that they're coached and the team that they are, that I don't think the moment's going to overwhelm them in Tasmania. I think that they are a well-built team that, I mean, Scott Roth is practically playing the Brian Gorgon, us against the world sort of card. You know, with the whole defend the island stuff as well. He has built that mantra, and it's something that the entire team, I believe, has all bought into and all that. And the one thing I learned from game two is that stadium is going to be rocking. And I'm excited to see him, an opportunity for them to close out their first ever championship. And the one quote that Scott Roth has said, and I think it's gone a little understated. He's already said, we've already won. And it's not we've already won the championship. It's like we've already won because we once again have exceeded expectations. And so it feels like they believe they've got another free swing at it. They've got two chances now to close out a championship. And it's going to be an interesting watch over the next game, possibly two.
The thing that concerns me about United and the concern I've had and we've spoken about here is that down the stretch in the fourth quarter, you've got Shay Ely shooting threes. You've got Matthew Dellavedova, and he made it, but shooting a pull-up three in transition without another teammate shooting it, another teammate touching it. I'm pretty confident that even though Dally hit that three late, that's a shot that if Tasmania are going to live with someone beating you and they're going to live with Dally and Shay shooting threes as opposed to Joe Achul getting it on the rim, Chris Golding getting his feet set or getting his one dribble left going or Ian Clark yo-yoing and making a play, I think you live with those options. And again, my concern is who do United go to down the stretch? Because as great as Matthew Dellavedova is, I still don't think he's a closer offensively. He's not that he doesn't have that element to his game where he's just going to be that natural scorer and create one on the road in Tasmania. So I reckon United's concern for me in a close game is whose hands do you put the ball in? It can't be equal opportunity down the stretch in Tasmania.
So my read on Melbourne United is you've got Ian Clark there for a reason, and he should be your fourth quarter closer with Chris Golding. And Shay Ely and Dally need to learn more on their dribble handoffs of driving at the defender to try and free those two up, and even Luke Travers to a degree. And because I feel like they're happy to use them as decoys at the moment, and the ball's going everywhere except for where it should be going in money time. Ian Clark has got a huge pedigree of being a closer, and I feel like he's the guy that you brought in to be the closer, yet you're not using him to close games in a way that's that makes sense to me right now. Obviously, plans change, and Dele's having a really, really good series so far, so it's hard to say he shouldn't be shooting those shots because he's knocking them down and he's making big plays for Melbourne United. But they need to find a way to get Chris Goulding and to get Ian Clark into that action a lot more come fourth quarter, because I feel like they, for the most part, they've been pretty patient waiting for their shots to come, and not a lot of action is running.
Almost too patient, and I agree 100%. And the thing is, I don't mind if Dele ends up shooting a shot in a final possession, but he can't be the only one handling it. It can't be a set design for him, I don't think. I think, like you said, I agree 100%. It's a set design for Ian Clark or Chris Goulding. It's just going to be fascinating. It's a really, really good series. It's somewhere in the back of my head, you still wonder if United will find a way to come back. But I'll tell you what Chris Goulding does have now. He's got his underdog status all of a sudden. He didn't have it at the start of the series when he said he did, but, hey, he wanted to be an underdog. He's got it.
Yeah.
Because that's what they are right now with Game 4 in Tassie. Mate, outside of that, we haven't watched much NBA.
Can I just circle one thing?
You got anything from the NBA?
I want to go to the NBL, actually, still. I saw the interesting article that the Sydney Kings are circling Bull Qual. And I couldn't agree more for a Brian Gorgian guy in this league being that guy in what he brings to the table to a team. They've already re-signed Xavier Cooks back for next season, for the next couple of seasons. But bringing someone like that as a defender in for that team, I think will speak volumes under Gorge's tutelage as well. He's going to be that bigger defender that's up the floor, and something that I've been thinking about in this playoff series, not the play-in series, but the playoff series, is the teams that have been winning and succeeding are the teams that are playing up the floor 94 feet and making every possession a bit of a grind. You look at the way that Tassie plays, they switch straight from offense to defense. You look at Melbourne United, switch straight to offense to defense. You look at Illawarra's resurgence, it's just been off the back of full court defense. And guess what Brian Gorgian's going to bring to this league? A level of full court defense and the way that he goes about his business. So it's a great job if I can get that across the line, because he'll fit that system really well.
I agree with everything you just said, but there's a really big but, and it is, I'll answer you, was Keanu pinned a better in Perth or Cairns?
At Cairns, but he had more responsibility in Cairns. He wasn't,
I agree. He got right, spot on, and he got paid more to go to Perth. Bull Cole's the same story. I sit here and I watch Cairns, and I'm a little bit. I mean, it's a bit. You've got to be a little bit gutted if you're Cairns investing in this youth. And I know that you're always going to say you want to see your play, you want to develop them, and they want to go on and do bigger and better things, but. Geez, it's got to be heartbreaking for Adam Ford and the Taipans to develop these players, to give them second chances, just to watch the big clubs like Perth and Sydney come in and offer more money and take them away because you can't match it. So while I agree with everything you said, and going to Brian Gorgian, one of the best coaches this country's seen, as opposed to going to John Riley, who's untried at that stage, you still got to feel, sometimes – if you improve so significantly under a coach, there's a likelihood that a lot of it's got to do with the coach, and you are absolutely best suited with that coach. And it doesn't mean it's just going to translate to another coach and another program. And it doesn't mean it's going to translate from a small town into a big city. So yes, I agree with everything you said from a basketball perspective, but I don't know. I just think there's more. I hope that he gets better, but I'd love to see one of the Taipans who gets a lot better under Adam Ford stay with Adam Ford and the Taipans a little bit longer.
I think there's a big difference between Bull Quoll.
Hey, I want to mention one last thing. Bull
Quoll being... Sorry. He's not going to be the second best player on the Sydney Kings. He will probably more likely be a fourth to fifth best player on that team once their roster is all set up. Keanu Pindle was supposed to be the Robin.
I don't think Keanu Pindle was ever going to be the second best the player on the Wildcats.
He was built to be the Robin.
I don't think
Keanu... Of the Batman and Robin, and it's never going to be that.
Yeah, you really... I never thought he was that. I thought he absolutely redlined and hit as close to his peak in Cairns as what he could have. You know what? The NBA example I've got of this is the Isaiah Thomas trade when Boston traded him away for Kyrie Irving. Now, I know the Kyrie Irving thing didn't work out, but and it's a different thing because it's a trade, but Boston traded Isaiah Thomas. If he was a stock or a share on the stock market, they are absolutely top dollar to the cent for what they traded him for. I think the form that Keanu Pindle was playing in for the Taipans was absolutely as good as you are going to get and was never going to be replicated anywhere else, Perth or otherwhere or otherwise. I've got one more. I want to touch on one more, and we've had a couple of technical difficulties. This has been horrendous technically. So if you're still with us and you're listening, God love you. But I want to finish on one thing here, Werther. I had a really fun sort of full circle moment. I was standing in the pregame function and a young lady walked up to me and she sort of said, "You're Chris, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, I am." She said, "I'm Scott Roth's daughter. You gave me your shoe after a game at the Dallas Mavericks when Dad was coaching you when I was 3 years old and I've still got it." I'm like, that's really fucking cool. So she's flown all the way in from the UK to be with her dad and her mum for this. She said, "We didn't expect him to get to the first championship series. I couldn't come. I couldn't get here for game one, but I'm here until after game five if required. I'm staying for the MVP ball." And I suppose with everything we've heard about what Scott Roth's invested into Tasmania, what he sort of battled through coming out of COVID and being away from his family for a long time, was just a really, really nice moment before the United Jack Jumpers game three. So I just thought I'd mention that, and I told her to make sure she said hi to her dad for me. So in case she forgets, and I'm pretty certain that's the last thing Scott Roth's going to be doing is listening to this podcast in a championship series or after it, but g'day, mate. I'm glad your daughter's still got the shoe floating around. Mate, given how bad the tech's been, we might call it there, mate. We'll get back together after we've got an NBL champion. We'll have more NBA to talk about next time. By the time we speak, the Taranaki Airs will have played their first game. I'm having a bit of a watch party at the Hotel Trentham on Saturday, 5:30 Melbourne time. If anyone's around and as lazy as me didn't make Easter plans, so. A lot more fantastic stories to come. Look forward to talking about them with you soon.